Hi, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, September 8th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. This week we're in the Gospel of Luke, and this week we're in chapter 20, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 20. And it came to pass that on one of those days, as he taught the people in the temple and preached the gospel, the chief priests and the scribes came upon him with the elders, and spake unto him, saying, Tell us, by what authority doest thou these things, or who is he that gave thee this authority? And he answered and said unto them, I will also ask you one thing, and answer me. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? And they reasoned with themselves, saying, If we shall say from heaven, he will say, Why then believed ye him not? But and if we say of men, all the people will stone us, for they be persuaded that John was a prophet. And they answered that they could not tell whence it was. And Jesus said unto them, Neither tell I you by what authority I do these things. Then began he to speak to the people this parable. A certain man planted a vineyard, and let it forth to husbandmen, and went into a far country for a long time. And at the season he sent a servant to the husbandmen, that they should give him of the fruit of the vineyard. But the husbandmen beat him, and sent him away empty. And again he sent another servant, and they beat him also, and entreated him shamefully, and sent him away empty. And again he sent a third, and they wounded him also, and cast him out. Then said the Lord of the vineyard, What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. It may be they will reverence him when they see him. But when the husbandmen saw him, they reasoned among themselves, saying, This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, that the inheritance may be ours. So they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. What therefore shall the Lord of the vineyard do unto them? He shall come and destroy these husbandmen, and shall give the vineyard to others. And when they heard it, they said, God forbid. And he beheld them and said, What is this then that is written? The stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner. Whosoever shall fall upon that stone shall be broken. But on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And the chief priests and the scribes the same hour sought to lay hands on him, and they feared the people, for they perceived that he had spoken this parable against them. They watched him, and sent forth spies, which should feign themselves just men, that they might take hold of his words, that so they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. And they asked him, saying, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar, or no? But he perceived their craftiness, and said unto them, Why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. And they could not take hold of his words before the people, and they marveled at his answer, and held their peace. Then came to him certain of the Sadducees, which deny that there is any resurrection, and they asked him, saying, Master, Moses wrote unto us, If any man's brother die, having a wife, and he die without children, that his brother should take his wife and raise up seed unto his brother. There were therefore seven brethren, and the first took a wife and died without children, and the second took her to wife, and he died childless, and the third took her, and in like manner the seven also. and they left no children and died. Last of all, the woman died also. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife of them is she? For seven had her to wife. And Jesus answering said unto them, The children of this world marry and are given in marriage, but they which shall be accounted worthy to obtain that world and the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Neither can they die any more, for they are equal unto the angels, and are the children of God, being the children of the resurrection. Now that the dead are raised, even Moses showed at the bush, when he called the Lord the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. For he is not a God of the dead, but of the living, for all live unto him. Then certain of the scribes answering said, Master, thou hast well said. And after that they durst not ask him any question at all. And he said unto them, How say they that Christ is David's son? And David himself saith in the book of Psalms, The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou on my right hand, till I make thine enemies thy footstool. David therefore calleth him Lord. How is he then his son? Then in the audience of all the people he said unto his disciples, Beware of the scribes, which desire to walk in long robes, and love greetings in the markets, and the highest seats in the synagogues, and the chief rooms at feasts, which devour widows' houses, and for a show make long prayers. The same shall receive greater damnation.
Okay, Dan, do we have any questions tonight?
We have one question tonight, John.
Hang on a second. Let me turn on the queue here. All right, if anyone wants to get into the queue, it's a star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button there. Okay, go right ahead, Jim.
This will be a memory check from last week. Apparently, a question
By the way, before you go, did I turn the recording on? Let me double check on that. Hang on.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Jim.
There was something mentioned, and they want to know what the case name or citation that had a statement, the government cannot be sovereign. They're looking for the reference for that.
The government cannot be sovereign. Well, that's just, that's common sense to begin with. Nobody's above the law. And the government in itself is an entity. It's, made up of many different parts, of course, but it's the people that are running that government that claim the sovereignty. So it's probably what they're talking about. They may be sovereign in their person outside of their, elected or appointed position, but nobody in government has sovereign immunity. They have immunity with inside their jurisdiction. As long as they are acting inside their jurisdiction, the authority and the powers that we the people gave to them, and of course we gave Congress the authority to write statutes and regulations. It's called equity. It's legislation, legislative law. They can have, as long as they're acting with inside that, they got sovereignty. Now, the only sovereign is we the people, we the lawmakers, so we're above their law. We ordained and established the Constitution for them, for the United States of America. And therefore, in that process, we are above the law. Any legislation they make has no power or no authority upon us. We have sovereign immunity to anything that they might want to address, like civil law. Now, we're not above natural law, of course. We are governed by natural law, and that's the law that all people are under. But government is under the people's law, okay? And they have a job to do within their certain powers or authorities that we gave them. So, you know, let's take you know, even the president is not above the law. I mean, I listen to all these things on the news from time to time in the past, saying that Biden had, you know, has sovereign immunity, that he's not, he can't be held liable for this or that, and gave all of these different pardons and so on and so forth. Well, all those pardons are null and void because it's part of a conspiracy to destroy America, and even Biden himself, and many, many other people, thousands of people within our government. You know, we have Obama, of course, the same thing with him. They don't have sovereign immunity. They just don't. when Obama killed an American citizen, and I believe he's killed numerous American citizens, well, he committed murder. He's not, he doesn't have some immunity against that or from that. You know, if it was a terrorist, of course, it's a different story. But you can't kill an American citizen. And so they do, they make up the law. They make up what they want. You know, they have, you know, many different laws that are unlawful. And if it's legislative law, it can be held within the authority of the powers that the, you know, the, in the case of the federal level, the federal judges, you know, apply the equity upon them in legislation. But once a criminal act is executed, they're no longer under that. They're under the law. Immediately, any kind of crime immediately moves that into the law. Again, you know, the Constitution is clear. We the people declared that law and equity is the law of the land. Law, if you look up the word law, in law, at law, just the word law on its own, it is natural law. It's governed by, of course, ultimately it's governed by common sense, because that's what natural law is, with an eye on justice. And of also restitution for the injured. So once a crime is committed, let's say I'm talking about an individual that's in some kind of a power authority in the government. Once they commit a crime, it moves into a law court. Now the equity is still, they're held to equity anyway because they agreed to that when they came into the power and the authority, the position that they have, so that they maintain. You know, then they're under that law. But if the law is contrary to the common law, if it doesn't make sense, or if injustice is applied because of that law, that's where the power of the people in that court of law, which would be 12 individuals, called a jury, of course, they would have the power and the authority to negate that law. It's the power of nullification. Again, most people don't know about that. You know, when you have statute of limitations, there's no such thing as a statute of limitation under common law, under the law of the land, the true law. So they can write these statutes of limitations within their legislative law, and it may be applied within a case that goes before a judge that's not criminal, and those limitations, you know, that's fine. It's law for that. It has nothing to do with we the people. But once a crime is committed, any statute of limitation that might be tried to be applied to forgive that person doesn't exist because they're now under the law, the true law of the land. The other thing is the rules of common law are the rules of law, but it's also the rules of equity. And it had been so all the way up till 1938. The 1934 Rules Enabling Act, which empowered the United States Supreme Court to write law, or civil law, let's call it, because that's what they call it. They wrote civil law to be applied upon the people and all beings, you know. And once that, and of course that's unlawful, that's not possible, they'd have to, you know, negate the law of the land. So in theory, well, not in theory, you know, the law of the land has been snuffed out in a sense. It's still there. It still applies. But as long as these evildoers continue to maintain power and authority and hold up civil law, then it's going to be held up. And that's one of the things we're struggling with here at National Liberty Alliance, and that's where we look for support of the people in order to deal with this problem. As a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, we wanted to address a problem, a situation with the Lavoie, the assassination of Lavoie Finnegan, and many, many, many other things. We have like 800, well, over 600 pages, and there's other of evidence that the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury has, you know, come together and compiled a lot of strong evidence, very, very strong evidence. It's clear as night and day. So we have lots of evidence, and then we have audio evidence. We've got video evidence. We've got, and I believe, a couple of hundred other pages of evidence and concerning this. And there was a lot of people involved with this conspiracy. It was a big conspiracy because it was all about plutonium. You know, Hillary Clinton was selling plutonium to the Russians, and the ranchers out there were the problem. And therein is the problem with the Hammonds and the Bundys, and then eventually the assassination of Lavoie Finnegan and the takeover of the wildlife preserve there, and the conflict that took place, and then all the people that were arrested and tried. Those who went through the trial, at least up there in Washington, that didn't take the plea, actually the jury was able to wake up, got enough information from within the courtroom that they were able to be woken up. And they did find them not guilty. Unfortunately, all these other people that took the plea have done their time. I don't know if anyone's still doing their time. But this is the problem we have. And so anyway, you know, since we're talking about this, we were looking for funding to do something about this. We only collected $50 on that. So, but if people, you know, we really need to do something with this. Hopefully people will rethink that and support this issue to send all this information to Attorney General Bondi, and also to Kash Patel, because he was the one that made the statement that brought this thing all to light. I don't know how long ago that statement was made. I didn't look into the date of that. And then, of course, to the President Trump. So we wanted to send this package of information to three of them, and it's going to cost a bit of money. I'll just ask again, because this is an opportunity for us to be able to address different issues and resurrect the different issues that we have already been sending to Bondi and to President Trump. We do this in a presentment, of course, and it would be a huge task to put all this information together, the videos, the audios, and all of the papers, and then get it served out and so on. But, if we can get that out, there's a lot of issues and an address. We can do this as a presentment and address a lot of different issues. You know, we see what the judges have been doing. You know, the judges, goodness, these judges are total morons. We need to talk to the president and get his ear, and I think we have gotten his ear. We got information to him. We did it through presentments. We sent him a book, Government by Consent. We've sent these books to everybody in his cabinet and numerous other people around him. We sent the presentments and also the indictment of the federal judiciary. So to some degree, he knows, he's got to have read some of this, or other people within his cabinet have read some of this. And I'm sure there's conversations on this. There should be. If there isn't, then they're brain dead. And they're totally brain dead. But I don't believe they're brain dead. But they do have to be woken up. They are ignorant to certain things. You know, Trump just recently discovered that there was no pandemic. It was a plandemic. I hear that he is outraged on this. And he should be. People are going to be held liable for this. And there's a lot of talk out there on the podcasters and so on. So we need to make it clear, and we've addressed this already, but I think we can address it even stronger. Because Kash Patel, he believed the lie. He believed the lie of a court that was controlled by the powers that be, whoever, the deep state. He believed the reports of the FBI, And they were the ones that killed. They assassinated. We know who they are. We know all the players. We've named them all. We filed a unified United States common law grand jury filed an indictment on this. I think it was 2000. Goodness, what year was this? Might have been 16. I don't remember, 16 or 17. I don't know if anybody here remembers what year we did that in. But we can find that out just by looking at the paperwork. But anyway, and we filed all these papers, by the way, for people to read them. You can find them under federal court cases. And you can come down, you know, we did an action against the judiciary. But the Finucane murder or assassination, okay, we filed a lot of papers on this, a lot of information, or shall I say, a lot of evidence. Okay, and we like, you know, we need to correct this problem. These people need to be held accountable for the assassination and all of the destruction that they've done. But in any event, we've also educated Trump, if he's paying attention, or some others who are in his cabinet that may be paying attention, or Bondi, who's in his cabinet, may be paying attention. You know, we filed a lot of information, and we filed also the information concerning the original 13th Amendment. Which prevents any bar attorney from holding any position of authority, any position of trust in our government. And we need to execute that 13th Amendment, number one. Also, we need to get, and I know this is a big statement here that I'm going to make right now, but if we're going to truly return back to our foundation, if we're going to truly turn back to, you know, who we are as a people, and we're going to truly apply the law, being the Constitution, then we must, we've already indicted on the federal level, we must remove every single federal judge. Every one of them have got to go. And the reason, you know, I'm sure there's some good guys, and maybe they could be accepted to some degree, but I don't know if that's right and just either, because the main thing that they've done was they closed the doors of justice in our federal courts. And that also went down to every single state. The courts of justice, or the doors of justice, have been closed in every courtroom in America. And it's been so since 1938. It may have taken a few years for that to, you know, sort of move towards the whole court system. And some judges may have been stubborn for a while, who knows? I don't know, I wasn't alive back then. But in any event, at this point in time, there is no court of justice. You can't get a court to open up under the law of the land. It does not exist. And this is what we're facing. And I'm not aware of anyone that is working on this particular problem. We do know that Trump realizes and recognizes that our judicial system has been taken over by the enemy, enemies both foreign and domestic. And look what they've done to him. That's an example. Look what they're doing now to do everything to continue to destroy America, to continue to prevent Trump from going forward to do the things he has to do at every step of the way. And if anybody's listening in on the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, when they have these morons that claim to be judges to come up, and they pass them through anyway, they haven't got a clue on what the Constitution says. They don't know what the Bill of Rights. Some of them are foreigners. They're morons at the highest degree, and they're not Americans, at least not in their mind. They're not Americans in their mind. And look at what's going on in the Supreme Court with some of these justices, some of the thoughts and the opinions that come out from some of these, you know, moron judges on the United States Supreme Court who refuse to bend the knee to the common law. Okay? Well, we have to fix this. And the people need to get involved to fix this. You know, the people alone can fix this. We don't need Trump to fix it. The thing is we need the people across America working together to fix this. And therein is why we started the committees of safety that we're trying to build across the United States in every county. so that the people come together within their counties and work it out from the grassroots level up, working together, county to county, state to state, across this United States. So it's up to the people to do this. Unfortunately, again, I think I mentioned this before. Matter of fact, I know I mentioned this before, but I'll bring it up again. You know, going back to 2008, 2007, I think around 2007 when the Ron Paul movement started, I think that's when it started, around 2007. And then the Tea Parties followed suit after that, the Glenn Beck movement stuff followed after that, and the people were everywhere. We had meetings everywhere in every county. I had been to so many meetings, and the place was always filled with people who wanted to save America and do something to take this nation back. And, we didn't formulate a plan, a really good plan, until I think it was 2012 or 13 when it started to surface, the plan that we put together, which really is a Founding Fathers plan that we're executing, which is Committees of Safety, to take control of our government. But in any event, people were involved. Not so anymore. But the problem is that, unfortunately, people are lazy, or a lot of people have been made lazy. You know, we've all been taught by the same educational system, well, most of us have anyway, and we're bombarded with fake news and movies that tell us things that we believe, and I mean, things go on and on and on, and gets to the point, who knows what's truth anymore. But in any event, all these things have caused a lot of problems, because in the minds of the people, you know, they've been told that the two things you got to do, and they really only push one, go vote. You want government by consent? Go vote. Yeah, how's that working out for us? You know, we get to choose the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. Your choice. Which one do you want? And so it's a mess. Of course, the other one from time to time is, you know, responding to the jury call, which every jury is stacked. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if any jury in the past, out of 50 years, maybe more, 30 years, I don't know. I don't think there's really been a good jury that has not been controlled and stacked. From time to time, a stacked jury does get liberated. Maybe someone within the jury knows something about the law and the Constitution and how things ought to be and who we are as a people, and educate and convince those people, and they come up with decisions that the government never planned on happening, and people walk. I've seen a few cases like that. But our entire system has been taken over, and the people have to do something about it. Unfortunately, they think, well, hey, Trump's in charge. Look, he's doing a great job. We see what he's doing, and he's bringing the economy back, and, you know, he's going to get rid of taxes, the unlawful taxes. He's making peace around the world. He's going after all these drug lords that are killed. You know, we're at war. We are at war. Trump has every right and should be going into these countries and bombing any place that is making all of these drugs and blowing up all these ships. That's all lawful, okay? Because we are at war. We are at war with drugs. I heard that more people have died of drugs in a period of time, and I don't remember what that period of time is, than all the wars that America has fought. Just think of that statement. That's amazing. Okay? We're at war. They're killing our people. They're killing our children. But again, the people need to support them, of course, and to a major degree they are supporting them, but it's not enough. It's not enough. We have to educate this administration in areas and places that they're ignorant to. We have to stimulate them to start thinking and talking about things to bring us back to where we belong, okay? But anyway, Trump is trying to make peace around the world and so on and so forth. So people have become complacent. I talk to a lot of people. I try to push, you know, I'll go talk anywhere, you know. If I can't physically go there, I'll do it through Zoom. Everybody's... first of all, not as many people show up as we used to, going back 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, all through that area. People were really involved. Not anymore. because Trump's there. Everything's okay. We don't have to worry no more. The Constitution cannot and will not protect itself. Only the people can protect that. Only the people can take back America. And so we need to become active again. Okay? We need to get more involved. People need to wake up. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. One of the things I'd like to impress onto Trump, if we got his ear, and again, we don't send this only to Trump. We send it to all the people around him, and in the hope that at least one person reads through this stuff, and they wake up and they realize, hey, wait, this is common sense. This is who we were as a people. We're not America no more. America is a mindset. And that mindset is a common law mindset. That's what America is. When we lose that, and we have lost that, people are ignorant. They don't know the law. They don't know the Constitution. How do you know who to vote for? How do you know what they believe and think and what they're going to do? How do you know when they're violating the Constitution if you don't know the Constitution? If you don't understand and know the Bill of Rights? If you don't know what common law is and what a common law court is, or when you're going into a court, whether it is a court of law, a just court, or just another setup to destroy whoever's being brought into that court, because that's all they're doing. The status quo holds up all the time. They maintain the status quo. But one of the things we need to do, and this is pure common sense, how can we elect anybody to any position, whether they're a mayor, a dog catcher, the President of the United States, a senator, a congressman, any of our representatives within a state? How can we elect any of those people? Why would we elect any of those people if they don't know what the Constitution is, if they don't know what the law of the land is? What's wrong with us? Look, they need to be qualified to hold these positions. I think Trump and his administration has proven the fact that we need qualified people as presidents of the as the president of the United States. You know, our founding fathers, a lot of them were businessmen. Okay, and it makes sense that a businessman should be someone with knowledge of business, at least have some experience in business. Okay, to be the president, but a lot more than that. And a president is really, his position is to try to, you know, take the best idea. He gets a lot of counseling, and he uses his common sense and his logic, and Trump does talk about that common sense, and makes the best decision he thinks of. Some of it is his own decision, other is decisions that other people have come up, a great idea, and let's go with that one. Or maybe two or three combined, whatever the case may be. But the bottom line is that common sense has to return, and we must enforce somehow. If we could do it on a federal level, eventually we could work it out on a state level. But we can start it because Trump has the ability to do this on the federal level and require these people to take a test to make sure that they know what the common law is, what's the difference between law and equity, to know what the Constitution says and what the Bill of Rights, which is the capstone of the Constitution. They need to understand what these things are, and they need to learn these things from the position of truth, because some people have certain ideas or thoughts that it's not the truth concerning understanding, even the Constitution. I mean, how can you argue against the First Amendment? How can you argue against the Second Amendment? But people do. They claim us to be a democracy. I mean, that's insane. Our founding fathers were clear. There's not a tincture. Those were their words, not mine. There's not a tincture of democracy in our government. Not a tincture. Just because we elect people by popular vote, and not all, we don't elect the president that way, and we shouldn't be electing the senators that way. But just because we elect our representative by popular vote, I mean, that's just common sense. It's not democracy. It's common sense. We are not a democratic republic. That's an oxymoron. That's water and oil. It just don't mix. It don't work. And we can't have a two-party system. People think that you can't have this kind of a government without a two-party system. They say you can't have a three-party system or a four-party system, and they must have the parties. Well, that's our destruction. George Washington was absolutely crystal clear about this. There's no mistake about it. And our founding fathers agreed in one accord that the political parties will be the destruction of this nation. And that's exactly what has happened. Between the Bar Association, the removal of the 13th Amendment, allowing the minions of the New World Order, who were taught to come in and get rid of our common law courts, they've been working on our land since 1750, before we even became the United States of America. They were already nibbling away at the common law in the colonies. It had to go. It's a problem. They were already working that out in Britain at the time. And we need to take these things back. And people need to step up and get educated. They need to set some time aside and work on these problems. They need to come together as a people within their communities. Through committees of safety on a county level, and you're dealing with all of the governments within that county, you know, the village government, the town government, the county government, and even the state government as far as your representatives are concerned, working with other counties that are doing the same thing, and collectively we're working all together on our state level. And then, of course, on a federal level for our representatives and other people in other states should be doing the same thing. There is absolutely no other way, and I challenge anyone to show me another way. There's no way that we can have government by consent unless we form together as people on the grassroots level and take back our government, take back our schools, get a proper education to our children. Give them a college-level education by the time they get through the 12th grade. They had that kind of an education just through the 8th grade. Imagine what we could do through the 12th grade. We've got to go to school for 12 years. Imagine what kind of an education we can give our children in 12 years if we gave them a true education, taught them who they are as a people, and their duty to return back to the things that are necessity to make this nation great again. To teach them morals, not immorals, but morals, you know. Only the people can do this. You know, government by consent is an unalienable right, but very few people are exercising it. And unless we're exercising it collectively, we're not going to be able to take control of this nation. It just can't and it won't happen. As Jefferson said also about education, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. The judicial system is, as far as justice is concerned, does not exist. The Constitution and the courts does not exist. How do people go to bed at night realizing that anything could happen to you someday and you have to go into a court? And you're getting this star chambers or whatever you're getting. You're not getting law. You're not getting justice. And so we need to know these things, and we need to get involved. And it starts off with the people collecting and getting together in committees of safety, but also the work of National Liberty Alliance. The main work of National Liberty Alliance right now is to deal with the problems that stemmed off particularly from the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. Which has totally, totally destroyed our courts. And it starts with educating the administration. Never before has the opportunity been that we the people have today than the people, the administration that we have. We actually have people, and I've looked at all these people, I've listened to these people talk, and they all seem to be in one accord, a desire to bring this nation back to where we belong. Not that they know, you know, what this nation really is. They got it to a degree. We have to fill in the blanks that they don't know, the education that they don't have, the information that they have not received. We've got to give this back to them. We've got to give this to them so that they can then, you know, bring us back to where we need to be. But there needs to be a law, at least on a federal level, if we can get, and again, all these judges have to go. And the Bar Association has to be no bar attorney is permitted to be in a court of law, because they're destructive from what they've been taught. They don't know what the law is. They think they do, but they don't. They have no clue. But we need to take our courts back. We need to get courts of justice. And a nation will only be as just as its court. That is the reflection of who we are as a people. And that's how bad it is in the courts. You know, you don't get justice there. So we have to take all this back. And again, what National Liberty Alliance is doing, we need to communicate more with this administration in order to make communications with all these people, and especially to work with and put together the presentment that we want to do concerning Finnegan, which opens up a lot of different things that we can have discussion in, or communication, let's say, in our presentment to the president and to Attorney General Bondi and all his entire administration. We'll copy all of them, not necessarily the full amount of all of the evidence, because it's way too much to get all that out to all of those. But we need to get all that evidence to at least three individuals. But we need to copy all of them, because, again, all we have to do is catch the ear of one of these people. And I do believe if they come to realize what we're talking about and they understand the things we are talking about, they will be relentless and will not stop until they get everyone on the same page to realize we're missing this, we're missing this, and we're missing this. So we are not a democracy. We're not a democratic republic. We are a republic. There's over 200 republics in the world today. But we are the only one natural law republic. We are a unique republic. Republic, you know, anybody, that any government that's a republic is supposed to be a government of law. And who makes the law is the key question here. In the case of all these other republics, man is making that law. I don't want to be under man's law. I'll be under God's law. That is just and right. And even mercy can be applied there. Under man's law, there is no mercy. And it's just problematic. Okay, anyway. I took that opportunity to go through all that from that question. I think that was the only question, right, Jim? Jen, you talking?
Yes, that's you.
Okay. All right. Again, we have one person in the queue. If anybody has a question, a comment, or a correction to offer, or if they can tell us about some other place that's doing something that can achieve the same goal, I'd love to hear about it. Maybe we need to work with those people. I know there is no other way to do what needs to be done except for the way that we put together. And again, this is not our plan specifically. This is our Founding Fathers' plan. This is how they created this nation, through committees of safety. Okay. Well, like I said, we have one person in the queue. We'll start off with that. If anybody has anything, raise your hand if you're on a app or browser. Star 6-1 if you're on a phone. Okay, we got someone anonymous. What's your first name and your state? Let me try to unmute. Okay, anonymous, what's your first name and your state?
Yes, sir. I'm getting an echo.
Hold on a minute. Is anybody else getting an echo? I know I have a headset on, so
I've got my headset on. Here, let me
hear. Is anybody else hearing an echo out there? Or is maybe just that person?
It might be. No, I'll call you right back.
All right. We have one other person in the queue. We'll take them and then come back in. Okay. Tare, is that T-A-R-E from New York? You got the mic. What's your first name?
Hello, John.
Yes.
This is from New York. I keep getting cut off from this call. I'm wondering if this call is bugged.
No, we haven't had that kind of a problem, and certainly we don't cut people off at all. It would be extremely rare. I don't think we would cut anyone off. Yeah, I don't know why that would happen. Could be a bad internet connection. I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to get in as much as I can before I get cut off.
Sure.
But I I got a letter from the judicial conduct.
Excuse me a second. If you do get cut off and you get your question out there and you get disconnected, this is recorded. You can go up to YouTube and catch us. You've got a link on the right side of our website here where you can click on YouTube and go to our page and you can listen to whatever the answers are if you miss out on that. But go ahead. And your name is, how do you pronounce your name, first name?
Tara. Tara.
Okay. Go ahead, Tara. You got it.
All right. Well, I got a letter from the judicial conduct that the judge that was in the landlord-tenant court is not a judge. So I confronted him with that. But he asked me for the letter that proves it. So we see this guy, his name is Keeman Thermos, and he's been making orders, you know, unlawful orders. So my situation.
What court is this? What kind of a court? This is housing court or something?
Yeah, in housing court.
Okay, this isn't in New York City, is it?
Yes, yeah, in Queens County.
Oh my goodness, you're in trouble down there. Go ahead.
Oh boy. So right now I was evicted, and the house that they evicted me from was already transferred to my trust, to a trust that I granted, and now they denied that existence, and it's in the public record.
Okay, being evicted, are you talking about something you own or something you were renting?
No, something I owned.
Okay, so you owned the house. What was it,
Foreclosure.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of a question or concern. Okay, so it was a foreclosure, and you're going to housing court. Yeah, that's a horrible court. All right, go ahead.
Right, but it's a long, complicated story. I've been doing this foreclosure for 21 years, and I finally put a commercial lien on the property and then did a collateral disposition after the lien was perfected. And so they are denying that it was done with any validity.
Do you know Lydia down there? Have you been talking to Lydia?
No, I don't know who that is.
Okay, because the things you're talking about is something that she was teaching. And she's been very much involved in the housing courts now. But go ahead, continue. I'm sorry.
Right. So at this point, they boarded up my doors, and they gave me 1 hour per day to go get my belongings. But the trust was able to get me inside because the trust is now the new owner. But they said that deed was fraudulent because they happened to think that they were the ones that foreclosed on it. But because they were acquiesced into a contract which makes them the debtor now, they're in denial of that. And so the judge said that I had no authority to do what I did in the first place, which is a UCC lien. So they're in denial, and now they're, you know, bogarting the situation. And this judge, who is not a judge, is putting, you know...
Why do you say
out. Well, the judicial conduct review sent me a letter saying that he was not a judge.
What did they say he was then? I mean, how did that letter describe that?
I got it through a FOIA request asking for his you know, hazard bond.
Oh, so he doesn't have a bond? Does he have an oath?
Right, because he's not a judge, so he doesn't have any of those things.
Yeah, but I'm trying to understand the specifics. So he's not a judge because he doesn't have a bond and an oath, correct?
Well, they just said he's just not a judge. They don't say that he's an administrator or a magistrate. No, they just said that he's not in our jurisdiction.
Yeah, I think they're arbitrators down there. But go ahead.
Right. So I don't know if they're supposed to have bonds or oath of office because they're just, you know, administrators. I have to go to the insurance commission and find out.
We found out that down in New York City, they have a collective bond for all judges throughout the state. But they still have to put up some collateral, you know, something of value also themselves. And But right now, pretty much the people are paying for that because they're doing this through, you know, well, I'm not sure how exactly they're doing it, but I do know we've spoken to the people down there. It took a while to get this information out, but they have, in New York City, they hold the bonds of, again, it's collective, of all the judges. Yeah, the housing courts, they're probably arbitrators, so you're probably right on that, and they generally should have a bond, but they still have to have an oath also. Have you looked for that to see if there's an oath that exists for them?
I haven't gotten to that point with this particular guy because, you know, that's what I'm dealing with right now. And he's, you know, he's just bogarting the situation, taking off all the stays and putting me in a hazardous predicament. So the thing is, the trust owns the property in Acris. So that's a public record, and they're denying that it's valid. So they're taking all full faith and credit away from the public record, you know, Fourth Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that at this point I could get a knock on the door and it's the police saying that no one's allowed to be in the house.
Okay.
But no.
Let's go back a little bit again now. You said you got a letter. Who did the letter come from? And the letter actually said he is not a judge.
Right, the person I was inquiring about.
Okay, and who did that come from? What agency or person? Who did that come from?
You know, I have it in front of me. It's the State of New York Commission on Judicial Conduct.
Oh, okay. Well, you got something pretty valid there. Now you have a due process case. They can't take these things without due process. And even if the person was a judge, they're acting under equity, which is legislative law, which has nothing to do with you. And there's so many issues here. You know, the money originally came from the Fed. You said it's a mortgage foreclosure, right?
Right.
Yeah, the money originally came from the Fed. You know, the government is supposed to give out the people loans for the purpose of, at a very low interest rate. You know, a couple of percent at most, and they give out the loans, the money, okay, for people who want to buy a home. And what happens is the banks usually write them up, and then they tap it up, you know, whatever percentage they tap the loan up to be, okay. Then they make the collection for that too, but they are just the in between people. They're the ones that just set the whole system up. They went and got the money from the Fed. The banks or whatever mortgage company you might, you went to a bank, I presume.
Right.
But many, right? Was that correct?
Yeah, it was Long Beach Mortgage, which was taken over by several times. Now it's with Deutsche Bank.
What you need to understand is that they have no skin in the game. Okay, that's number one, which means there is no contract. There was no meeting of the minds, okay? There also is no contract because there is no literal contract between you and the bank that puts any kind of, connection with them having anything to do. They're just operating as an agent between you and the Fed in order to get the money from the Fed window, okay? Then they send you out bills, and you pay the bills with the interest, And they don't have the authority to really to even do that because they're no longer acting as an agent. The agent was really, you know, they might have made a point or two or even 3 points on the loan for settling the loan, and they're done. But, you know, again, and the whole process of the foreclosure is also unlawful. We've got a paper on that. I'm looking to see if we have it up on this page here. Give me a second. I'm just scrolling through to see if I have it here. My name is. Okay, I know we covered this in our law course. We may have it up there. I'll continue to look, but go ahead with your call on that.
Yeah, but you know, at the auction, nobody bought it, so the bank bought it back because I had to lose pendants.
That's a fraud again. There you go again, a fraud. The whole thing's a setup. And I bet you they bought it for dirt cheap.
Well, they said they paid $357,000.
Yeah, they didn't pay that. What was what did you owe on the mortgage?
It was upside down by that point. So there was no equity in the house at that point because of the interest rates and everything.
Well, they didn't pay that kind of money for that. Trust me.
Well, you know what I noticed? That the referee signed the referee's deed, but there was no judge signing off on it. Is there supposed to be a judge in the
Of course. They can't take your property without due process, okay? So they just can't seize it. That is against the law. The Fifth Amendment. You can't be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. You haven't gone through due process of law. Due process law of law is a case that goes before the common law, where the people decide. There must be a jury, not a judge, not an individual, what did you call him?
An administrator?
Well, administrator or an arbitrator, or even a judge. A judge doesn't have the power or the authority to do that, okay? Due process is being able to go before a court, in a court of law, where the people decide, okay? And, there are so many problems here. Even, again, as I said, it's a fraud to begin with. There's a huge fraud on the whole process of foreclosures. First of all, they call them non-judicial foreclosures, okay? Because the reason why they call them that is because they can't, by law, go through that process. And that's why they call it non-judicial process. But it looks like you're going to a court. You know, they set up a person, looks like a judge. They set up a place that looks like a court. Even the federal court buildings, they set up a court. It's called a tax court. It looks like a real court. It looks like a real judge. It looks like, and you're in a building. The whole thing is a facade, okay? And they're applying statutes, civil law against you, and that is exactly what the Rules Enabling Act did. Is it fused together law and equity and called it civil law. So we are under civil law, which is repugnant to the common law. It's repugnant to our founding documents, okay? So this is the problem we have, and we have to fix this problem. And only the people can fix this problem. Again, Trump can't fix this problem. He can do some work to get us to a point where it makes it easier for us to fix this problem by dealing with the federal level. But on the state level, we, the people, have to deal with that collectively. But we may, and again, when I say collectively, I mean working with others in committees of safety, other people in other counties and throughout the state. And each state has to do the same thing. But there may be a way that I've been thinking about, because this is subversion, okay? This is part of subversion against the United States of America. They've taken over our courts. They brought in courts of justice. So maybe there could be something done on the federal level. I'm thinking that out right now to see if we can come up with something. But in any event, go ahead with your call.
Yeah. Well, I think that the next step would be a criminal injunction, because once you have the federal criminal
What you have to do is move it into federal court for cause, CAUSE. Move it to federal court for cause. The question is what is the cause? The cause is the denial of due process. You got a letter saying he's not a judge, okay? So you didn't even go into a place where they tried to do a facade to make it look like it's lawful. Okay, so you take it into federal court for cause. Now, herein is the problem. First of all, you're in New York. You're in the Southern District of New York, the worst in the world, in my opinion, the place to be. You also have the federal court down there, again, in the district in New York, and that is a problem. Because those people are the biggest crooks going. I mean, they really get involved with so much illegal activity, they don't even think about it anymore. They sleep like babies. They don't care. Maybe they're all sociopaths. I don't know. Well, they probably are. But you take it into federal court. You might want to try to take it out of the District of New York take it up into the Northern District, which is corrupt, too. but it's not as bad as New York City, the Southern District.
Wow.
If you take it into federal court for cause, and the cause is a Fifth Amendment denial of due process, that's your cause. And if you can prove that you have not been given due process, you should win the case. Now, you're going to have to win it probably through an appeal, and then, of course, taking it up as high as you can. There are two appeal courts up the system as you go. That's on the state court. But you're on the federal level, you can take it into the appellate court, and then, of course, the next court after that is the United States Supreme Court, which you'll never get into that one. You could win on the appeal there, and you should win in the federal court because they didn't give you due process. They took your property without due process.
Yeah, and then the thing was the trust that was holding the deed was in bankruptcy at the time of the eviction.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still an active bankruptcy happening. So it's not like an automatic stay because they tell me that the judge has to give you the automatic stay. And it's not automatic just by filing bankruptcy.
Go on.
Is yep. that wrong?
Oh, hang on. So, Jan, did you say something? I guess not. Repeat the question again.
Yeah, does a bankruptcy give you automatic stay from all these, you know, litigations and stuff?
Well, you could try to get it again on a federal level. You should be able to get it because you're kind of disconnected. Your home was filed with the Homestead Act, right?
Oh, you know, I heard about that. But I didn't do that, no.
Well, did you have a lawyer when you did this?
No, I've been fighting this on my own for 21 years.
When you went and purchased the home, when you started the whole thing, did you have a lawyer work with the closing and everything?
Yeah, that I had.
Okay, then during that process is when they'd set it up for the Homestead Act. And, you know, the question would have been, you know, is this your home to live in? And as long as, you know, you can have six homes, but only one of them can be on the Homestead Act. And so that lawyer should have done it. If it didn't, then you have another lawsuit you can do. Because that is, it's a horror if they didn't do that. It's incompetence. But in any event, you probably have it. You should go down and take a look at the records and go get all the information you can to see if the Homestead Act has been executed on that. Okay, so that makes it a lot stronger for you, for them to take that home from you. Connected with due process, I mean, you can prove the violation of due process because it's not a court. Okay, that brings them back to square one to start all over again. Okay, if you can win there, because then they'll try to move it into a court of law. A court that they claim is a court of law. It's not. It's a court of civil law. But at least it's a process that starts all over again, and you can get another 20 years before they can get you out of there.
Well, you know, it's funny because the bank, the servicing company, did send me a second foreclosure. So in other words, they said, you're in danger of losing your home. This is all over again after 21 years. And I took that letter and I sent it back asking them for the 1099-C because that first mortgage should have been discharged years ago with the bankruptcies that I've had. So now they're trying to, you know, like double dip into the same mortgage and saying that I still owe all this money.
So you did a bankruptcy, you've kept a record of the bankruptcy, and you've got all of the debtors, the people that you were indebted to, which would include also the mortgage company, all that was in your paperwork on the bankruptcy?
Right. All this discharge happened.
Okay, so that's very helpful, too. That's another good position.
You know, the thing about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have tried the commercial lien process with the UCC.
Yeah.
It's not being recognized because the UCC laws are not well known.
Right, but that takes you in a different position. You're moving out of the common law into legislative law, okay, which brings you under equity, which brings you under their, you know, thumb, okay? So I would not go that route.
Oh, I
know.
See.
People have been looking. I know people have been taught all this stuff and, you know, the man on the land stuff and you know, the straw man. I mean, I learned all that stuff in the very beginning, you know, because I was naive and I didn't know anything and I'm trying to figure things out. And I went through that road for a while until I realized that they didn't even understand the difference between law and equity. They couldn't explain that. A lot of people, we were dealing with a group of people, all of these people claiming to be in court, they were winning all these cases. I don't believe any of that. And then they teach people and they make money off them and it goes on and on and on. Look, at you should take a law course. You know, we have a law course. It's only $125. It's a 90-hour law course. It's a video. Or if you want to go somewhere else to get it, but you have to learn the common law. But you have to understand, you know, that equity has some play in this. You know, we can use the statutes against them. They are governed by statutes. That's why the statutes are written to govern them, not us. Okay, and you have to understand that concept, and you can start using that to control them. If you write winning cases, you know, if you write a winning case on this issue, even if you lose, if and when we get courts of law back, you know, I do believe we're going to get the federal courts back. I think Trump is going to see to that. And if you win your case, if you don't win your case in the federal court, at some point in time when the federal court becomes just again and we get good judges in there that will acknowledge these things and champion the Constitution, then it could be resurrected. And if you got a winning paper, you got a winning paper. That's it. Okay?
Right.
And compensation has to be paid to you if the home is literally taken from you at that point. At least compensation would follow somewhere.
Right, with damages in the federal court.
You have to go through the federal court for denial of due process, and you want to make that look at. For every injury, a constitutional injury, let's call it. You know, you can ask for a certain amount of money. Generally, I have a rule of thumb. I do it a lot more in your case than this, though. But my rule of thumb is for every time they violate my unalienable right. Okay, all the individuals involved. I would sue all of them for $1,000 face value Morgan silver dollars. I'd be very clear on what I'm talking about on that. Because $1,000 of Morgan silver dollars is, over $30,000 probably now. I heard that silver has gone up to 40 and it's pushing towards 50. I don't know an ounce. And if that's the case, then let's say 40. If it's at 40, that's $40,000 for each violation. Now, in your case, because it's the home, and it has a value. And there's pain and suffering, you know, and all the things you've been going through, the grief, so on and so forth. You might do $10,000 in Morgan silver dollars, depending on how many people are involved, because collectively you want to at least get the value of your home plus above that. But again, you're not going to be able to achieve this correctly without understanding how the courts really work and how to write good papers and put it together. And writing a good paper really is just reading other people's papers. And we've got lots of papers on our website that we've written. And in my opinion, they're extremely powerful. You can cut and paste, you know, you go through these cases, there's all kinds of different, you know, statements and, you know, sentences or whatever that we've written up, and you can cut and paste and build your case off of a lot of that and get the proper writing. But you have to have the right mindset. I try to teach that in the course. Consider taking the course if you're going to continue to go into the courts, or find someplace else to take a course. You know, but you have to know the law, and you have to understand what equity is all about, that it is lawful, it can be applied, and it's applied on them. And it has nothing to do with the UCC, because that brings you into a whole different situation here.
Well, yeah, UCC is not judicial, and that's what they don't understand, that they don't have the power to rule, you know, rule over the UCC, because it says right there in UCC 9617 that it's all taken without judicial proceedings. So they lose completely all their power, and they love to pick and you know, undermine everything that you have done but they cannot. And, you know, UCC is run by the Court of International Trade.
Yeah, and but I would use the common law. That's the most powerful. Problem is they don't know what the common law is. On the federal level, they do know what the common law is, so they do it. They're not ignorantly doing the evil they're doing. Okay, in the states, a lot of these people are doing this evil ignorantly. Not all of them, but I think most of them. On the federal level, I think it's the opposite. Most of them know and understand what you're talking about when you're bringing in the true common law. They remember, the lawyers have been taught, so therefore judges, being lawyers, have been taught that common law is trial court decisions. I mean, that's moronic. That's dumb. Going back to their own decisions to make law. First of all, there are so many bad decisions on the trial level. You go on the trial level and you can probably find 5 or 6 cases that will hold weight to prove your case with conclusions that they made on these trial courts. And the other side can do the same thing with a whole bunch of other decisions. I mean, it's just chaos and there's no logic to it. And again, going back to their own words, their own things in order to make decisions. No, common law is different. And common law is not difficult. What you have to realize, common law is simply common sense. Okay? Maxims are common sense. Water does not go uphill. That's a maxim. That's common sense, unless it has a pump on it, you know? So common sense with an eye on justice. That's what common law is. And the finale of it all is restitution. And if it's criminal, then at the end of the day, consideration of mercy. And maybe, of course, the jury may decide, no, we're not giving this person mercy. Let's send them to God. Let God take care of them. You know, because the Bible says if you take a life, you know, of course, then that man's life should be forfeited. But you have to have at least, I think, 2 or 3 witnesses. And you have to have a lot of evidence to get to that point for death penalty. But this kind of case you're talking about has nothing to do with the death penalty.
I hope not.
Yeah.
Because the way that the situation is going right now, I'm traumatized. You know, the way they almost broke my door down and 11 people came in here and, you know, just ransacked me. Mm-hmm. You know, and totally by surprise. You know, so at any minute I feel like my life is constantly, you know, in trepidation.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear what you're saying, and the statutes, like, are you talking about, like, 18 U.S.C.?
Right, well, those are statutes, and they can be used against them, okay? You know, you can use statutes against them on certain situations, okay? But you're going into the commercial code there, and it's a different story. I would always go common law all the time, but in common law, I might use statutes to apply against them. I use very minimum if I do, but I use them. You know, the other thing is understanding the federal courts. If you go to a welcome tab here and you come down to books by John Duresh, okay, I wrote a book, and it's a, let's see, Understanding the Federal Courts, okay? Something like that you definitely need if you're going to go into the federal courts to understand the structure and how that works. And you can also get, Court Access in the Common Law Book, okay? That'll teach you, that gives a lot of forms and how to write papers and what papers are required in order to open a case and so on and so forth, okay? I mean, it's not as powerful as the course itself, okay? And that you can find under Education Starts Here, and you come down to Court Access in the Common Law, you click on that, and that you can read through that page and see once whether you're interested in taking the course. It lays out and it gives you the first 3 hours. You can listen for free for the first 3 hours and decide on whether you want to take the course or not. But it gives you...
funny. I have an appeal. I did appeal the Supreme Court decision. It's still active. They're taking forever to answer me. That's why... the other side jumped over it.
How did you appeal? You did a notice of appeal?
Yes, from the Supreme
And
Court.
you served on both sides and paid the, you know, they're like the $45, I think it is.
You know what? Because I asked them for a poor person's order, I think they slowed my case down.
Well, you don't have to come up with money then. No, they slow your case. They slow a lot of people's cases down just because they can, and they're trying to really, you know, press you to your limits, and you know, they're just
Even if you pay, they slow you down.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. These people go on, and then God forbid you don't respond in 20 or 30 days, and they throw your case out. You know, but
I did use the common law.
Who did you appeal it to? You appealed it to the state court?
The second department, the second department, which is the Supreme Court state.
So it's a state Supreme Court in the county of what, Queens, you said?
No, they have it in Brooklyn.
Okay, it's in Brooklyn.
The second department.
Yeah, again, you know, again, if you don't get due process, so I wouldn't even go up that road. I mean, you could try going to them concerning the fact that you're not getting due process, and try to take it there first before you take it up to the feds.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do that, or else you get a Rooker-Feldman from the Fed.
No, you don't have to do that. There is a process they do require you to go through certain steps before you get to the next step and so on and so forth. But in the case of a denial of due process, it's immediately can be a federal case because it's a constitutional issue. It's a Fifth Amendment.
Okay, right. You know, I'm just trying to avoid being denied for, you know, not going through the sequence. You know, I use a 60B because that's considered a step on your way up, you know, because I have done things in federal court and got denied when I went directly there. You know, I tried to do a RICO case.
Well, the problem with again, doing a RICO case may not necessarily be a case that brings you, that's a federal level case, but it's not a constitutional case. You know, the federal court, in order to get into there, you have to be very careful. If you could write a great case on the denial of due process and then start to add some of the what's going on, some of the facts of the case down on the lower level, as soon as you do that, they're just going to spit it out and reject it. Okay, they don't want to hear nothing but the federal, but the constitutional argument. That's the only thing they can hear. So you don't have to bring any of the issues up. You don't have to go through, you know, what they've done here, what they've done there. Your injury is a denial of due process, going through this for a long period of time, a lot of aggravation and stress, you know, and so you can be looking in for the value of the home plus, pain and suffering. So if the home's worth $300,000, you can go for $4 or $5 million, you can go for $500,000. And again, I would do it in real money, okay? But you got to be careful on how you write that up, okay? Because it'd be very specific. And what's good about real money, you know, is and silver's going up and up and up because we're getting ready for the collapse, financial collapse. So silver and gold is going to continue to go up, and silver's finally good. When silver finally starts to really move up, you know, the end of days is here for the financial system that we have. It's just here. Because we wouldn't be able to survive, even with the silver at the price it is right now, it's going to destroy the economy in the sense that, you know, the values just change everything. But the thing is that if you sue at $40 an ounce now, Morgan Silver dollars, and you sue, and by the time you get to the end of the case, it's $70 an ounce. That's what you're going to get, okay? And again, you have to, and it's a lot more than that, you know. But in any event.
Oh, all right. You know, I was wondering because I've been hearing that JFK Jr.
Hold on a minute. I just want to make a statement here for other people. You know, right now, we only got one person in the queue, so we have no one else in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, *6 and a 1. If you're on an app or a browser, should be a button to get in. So, but go ahead. Back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been hearing from JFK Jr. lately. Supposedly, he has resurfaced, and he has been telling me that I need to get into the quantum financial system.
Did you say JFK Jr.?
Yep.
John?
Yeah, he's all over the place. I think he's an imposter, but yeah. I'm not sure.
No, he's dead. He's gone.
Well, supposedly, he's, you know, writing to people, telling them that they need to get into XRP and XLM and, you know, all of this quantum financial system. And I asked this imposter, what did Kim Gogan have to say about it? And he said she's been vetoing everything that we bring, you know, to the Congress, including McCarthy, who was trying to get something done, right? So I don't know if you're familiar with Kim Gogan.
No, not.
Okay, well, she's the guardian for the planet. She's ground control. And so she pretty much is what you call underground.
What does that mean, guardian for the planet? I don't understand. That's a strange title.
Yeah. In other words, any real money that needs to be shifted on the planet, like for earthquakes or natural disasters, she's the one that releases that. And, you know, so these large sums of money that came out the last time when Trump went down to Puerto Rico and saved those hurricane victims,
mm-hmm.
he became a hero because she actually helped fund that rescue mission. But since then, she has been denying everything because all they do is take the money and they don't use it for the proper purposes. And, you know, all they do is take it in and buy weapons.
What's this person's name again? I need to look into that because this is all strange language to me. But what's the person's name and the title?
It's called
the Guardian Planet. But you know, that's just probably a slang word.
The Office of the Guardian.
And where is that located at?
Well, actually, she's located right now in Durango, Colorado, but. She doesn't. She is associated with every world leader that you can think of.
Yeah, but the Office of the Guardian, is that a federal office? Or you look at world?
No, you could call it. Yeah, you could call it either international or intergalactic.
Okay, because I would. That has no clout in our system.
Right, you don't believe in extraterrestrials then.
Well, I don't believe and I don't disbelieve. Okay, I don't know. There's something going on out there, but I have no clue what that is, if that's what you're talking about.
Right, because eventually we have to use exopolitics when we do encounter those kind of outside forces.
Where did you learn these things? I've never heard, well, you know, I've heard little things of this or that, maybe, but where did you hear these things? How did you get informed on this?
You know, the first time I heard about it through the ambassador from the Red Dragon family.
Okay, that goes to China then.
Yeah, and he was from Sweden, but he was working with the Dragon families and also, you know, the Black Sun, you know, all of the secret societies.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of the guy that... you know, that is involved with a lot of this stuff. He did interviewed Rockefeller before he died, and he talks a lot about this stuff. Yeah, this has nothing to do with our law to begin with. It has nothing to do with natural law or common law, shall I say, number one. Number two, I don't know about these things. I've heard stories about this, but that's all it is stories. And I haven't found any serious research to give it any credibility.
It's underground.
And if it's not supposed to be. If it's international, then this person with the quote-unquote Office of the Guardian that releases money, that's not that has nothing to do with the economics of the United States, any releasing of money or anything of that nature. That, of course, is done by Congress. Of course, Trump can kind of get involved with stopping some stuff, like he's been doing. Okay.
Sometimes I talk things outside the box.
Yeah, I think that's not a good place to really bring into the issue. It's going to really just confuse the whole issue. A lot of people think you're wacko in this stuff, and I know these things exist, but it doesn't have the clout or any of the, justice that you'd want to get to, that you'd get through common law.
Right. I know it's related, but it's not directly related.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with your case. You shouldn't bring it in at all.
Well, I was just asking about the quantum financial system, which is something that is outside the box. You know, when you're talking about silver and gold coming back.
No. First of all, and this is why I'm a little upset with Trump with the Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is backed by absolutely nothing, just like the dollar is backed by absolutely nothing. And we should have learned our lessons. You would think he would learn. I can't believe he went that route, because he's an expert in the economy, in economics. But in any event,
XLM is backed by gold. XRP is backed by gold.
Well, that's
good. I think it's a certain percentage of it. So that's why these people.
That's good. But the point is this: I just want to make the point is that gold and silver is biblical money. Okay, it goes way, way back. Okay, and any government that moved to gold and silver, then they would do fine. The economy would do fine as far as the value of money is concerned, because it's gold and silver; it has value. There's all kinds of things you can go into history that people have created money from different positions, different ways, and every single one of them fail. Only gold and silver is the only one that survives the test. And we were under gold and silver for the first 130 or 40 years, and then we've lost it. More than 130 or 40 years, but let's say 150 years, we're under gold and silver. Once they removed us off of that, and they already were playing with that back in, when it started really back in 1916, in 1913 and 1916. And nobody, the 30s, it became illegal to have gold. And I'm not sure about silver, but it was illegal to have gold. And then, of course, I'm not even sure how it all worked out. That we were on, I think, a partial backing of the gold until, 1970, I think it was, somewhere around there.
And then the silver, when Nixon came in, he was the one that took it out, silver.
Silver, too, yes. Well, let me think about that.
1971.
Yeah, well, you may be right on that, yeah, because he became president at that point. So, yeah, he would be the guy involved with that.
I studied quite a lot about that. But, I when I start talking about that subject, I get a little bit wacko because there's so much involved in it.
Well, no, it's really kind of simple. The history of it is one thing, but the simplicity of what it is all about is simple. And here's the simplicity of it. It's a 20-to-1 ratio, and it always has been. As long as America has been around, and even before that, it's always been a 20-to-1 ratio, which means that 20 silver dollars equaled 1 ounce of gold, one gold dollar. That would be a $10, or no, $20. So $20 of silver, 20 ounces of silver, which is 20 silver coins, 20 silver dollars, would bring you to 1 ounce of gold. Okay. And that is the ratio that always has been. Once inflation came into play, that's when they started to play with the money. And that, of course, brings us to the Federal Reserve and, the 16th Amendment and all that crazy.
Yeah,
it's that simple. That you got to bring it to the simplicity, okay? Because it once we get back, if you got silver dollars, once we get back to the gold and silver, which is where Trump is trying to bring us, even that silver dollar is going to be high, give you a lot of value. You got to remember, right now the dollar is only 0.75 cents. Right now it's even going down less than that. Looking at prices and everything that has escalated, it's even less than that. It's probably 0.5 cents, literally, no exaggeration. What I used to be able to buy when I was a kid in the 50s and the 60s, a pizza pie was $1.15 for a large pizza pie, okay? So it gives you sort of, 2 cents to mail a letter, right now it's almost a dollar. It's like 78. And, you know, and they also, the certified mails, you know, used to be $3 and change. And just recently, last couple of times I'm sending it out, it's $3 and change plus four. It's like $7-$8 to send a certified letter out. I mean, it just jumped up over 100%. Okay? That's because the inflation is just so out of control.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I used to use Tax Pursue for my letter mailing, but it's hard to get that across the desk where you're trying to get stuff done for free, you know. But some people have been successful with it,
yeah.
You know. But at any rate,
anyway, the minimum wage back in those days when I first started working, it was $1.60 an hour, and $1.60 an hour, you know, it wasn't great, but for, you know, I was young anyway, so I was a kid, so it was good money for me, you know. But I knew I had friends that were able to land some good jobs, and they were getting like $5 an hour, and that was great, you know. So
yeah,
that's the difference,
of
you know.
Yeah.
Matter
well,
fact,
you know what? I'll let you know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Because okay. I got to do something right away. Otherwise, I'll be on the street. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm going to take some of your words
to heart. Well, get an education. Just get an education, okay? You know, let me put it this way. It seems like you've been dabbling long enough that you understand enough things that a good course, like the course we give, okay, a good course, you can probably zoom through that pretty quickly. You know, when I first tried to learn what's going on in the courts, you know, I got a course that some lawyer had put out, and I did that course. I'm trying to think of the name of it, but in any event, I sat down on a Friday evening after work, and I started on that course. By Sunday night, the end of the weekend, I had been through the whole course, made a lot of notes and so on and so forth, but it gave me the basics, but I had a lot of more work to do to fill in and make all that work. You may have a lot of the fill-ins already that you may be able to escalate to this quite quickly. Now, our course is a 90-hour course. It's videotaped, okay? You know, if you can go through that course quickly and start keeping your notes on that, and we have, you know, we have lots and lots of documents that we share, you know, forms and lots of different things. But if you go through that course, you may be able to get through it. I don't know how long, you know, it takes 90 hours, so you figure out your timing. It'll give you a good understanding. That and the book, if you're going to go to federal court, you know, to understand how the federal courts work, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because I asked them for a jury trial, and they just declined to sign.
Yeah, they looked at your time. Yeah, I know.
You know, so that's common law right there. You know,
well,
so I know I have that.
It is and it isn't common law, because if you were to get a jury trial, okay, first of all, if you go to a town court or village court, they'll try to give you a 6-man jury. Well, that's not a jury at all. It's got to be minimum 12. Okay, it's got to be 12.
Mm,
and that's
right.
A biblical principle because of the 12 witnesses. Okay, 12 witnesses of Christ. Okay, but so that, you know, you go in and you ask for a jury trial, you're going to get a stacked jury. Okay, and I did a paper on this on the federal. I couldn't do it on the states because you got 50 states. So, but I did it on the federal, and the states are no different. I downloaded a copy of their handbook, okay, for jurors, okay, and I went through it point by point, okay, and you can see how they, you know, stack the jury. For instance, they actually ask, for instance, questions like this, what news do you get your news from? Where do you get your news from? And they'll say ABC, NBC, or the newspaper. Where do you get your news from? So they want to know where you get your news from. That gives them what your state of mind is to begin with. They'll ask you if you have, if you own a weapon, okay, or anybody in the household owned a weapon, or any clothes, any of your children have weapons. You know, they ask you all kinds of, they may not have asked that one on the children, but anyone in the household, you know, they ask all these kind of questions, and they're building a picture of the type of person that they really want to put on your case, you see? So the whole thing is stacked to begin. That's called a stacked jury, all right? So now you get in there, and, you know, you're fighting the judge, and you, you're fighting, which shouldn't be making any opinions, and then you're fighting, of course, the other side that's prosecuting with the other side that's a lawyer in there, whatever it is, okay, and also you're fighting the jury. So you have to find a way to free that jury, you know? And wow. And we kind of have a plan for that, too, by getting into your record a copy, for instance, in a PDF format, maybe, you know, in a paper format as a memorandum. You're getting into the record, the book on a jury, you know, the common law jury. Because lawyers are brain dead, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, and they really don't like to read. They're kind of lazy. They do a lot of, you know, they do a lot of, you know, cases that they specialize in, and it's the same paperwork over and over again, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing is if they're not careful and don't read your papers and you get your papers, and then it becomes part of the evidence that you can use in the court. It's still an uphill battle. But you have to find a way to free that jury, to bring them to the realization, to liberate them, you know.
Oh, yeah, that takes time.
Power of unification, you know, is the biggie, okay? That they're the lawmakers. They decide what the law is, and that you're in under common law. And common law is that which is just and right. And, you know, our court system is built on not necessarily to uphold the law, but to uphold justice. And justice needs to be applied and upheld over the law. So if you have a law that they claim to be a law, that's civil law, but in any event, if it's repugnant to, you know, the law of the land, the true law, common sense, then it's null and void. You know,
that's hard enough, but to get an Article III judge is even harder.
Well, again, an article, there's no such thing as anything but an Article III judge. There is no other article judge. There's no Article I judge. They claim to be one, and they call the tax court the Article I judge, but it's not at all. You see, Article I is the authority and the power of the legislator, okay, the legislature, particularly the Senate, okay, in order to, you know, put a judge into power and authority, but they'd be under Article III. That's where their power and authority is. So Article I is really power and authority. The legislator has nothing to do with giving judges any more power or any kind of an extended jurisdiction like a tax court, you know, or anything like that. Although they talk like that, and that's what it is, and lawyers believe that because they're trained to believe that, and after all, they spent money to get that education. Who am I to tell them different? And so they believe that, okay, and they pull the wool over the people's eyes because they're ignorant to the law. Law is something that everybody should learn in school. You know, the book Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, in my opinion, should be taught in the schools. Children should know those things when they come out of the, you know, 12 years of education. They should know all that stuff.
Oh yeah, you know, but I realize that there's no judges with retired bar cards, because I looked them up, and they all have an active bar card, and they just practice law outside of the district where they work. That's the only separation that really happens. So you're still dealing with something that's very biased. That's the word, bias.
Yep. Well, a bar card is a membership. It's a union card, a union membership card. That's all it is. It's not a license to practice law. Matter of fact, common law is very clear that there is no such thing as a license to practice law. To practice law is an unalienable right. Everyone should be able to practice law. You may hire someone that maybe can articulate things better than you, but you should never give the total control of the case onto that person. And if you can, if you're a good speaker and you can articulate yourself well, and you've you know, studied well, then you should be able to go into court and take care of your business without a lawyer at all. You know?
Well, I read Schultz versus the Board of Education, and that's when I realized there was no license in the bar card. So, and I taught quite a few lawyers that, and I shut them right up. but you know, gave me a lot of food for thought.
What they've done is they've created a civil law system, and they attach this bar card, which is really, you know, a union card, and they convince people that it is a license, and if you're coming into their courts, they don't want you in their courts. They tried to throw me out of courts many a times, but, you know, they can't get around the Friend Act. What do they call it? The Next Friend. It's a federal, what would it be? I guess it's a statute. Let me think about it. Yeah, there's a statute out there concerning Next Friend, which gives, and there's Supreme Court rulings on this, that an ex-friend could come in and talk on behalf of a group and even represent somebody, okay? But that's in a common law court. You have to open up a court of record, which gives it more clout to be able to make that battle. But nevertheless, you know, they throw me out, but they never really pushed that hard.
I have to look that one up. Well, all right. Thank you so much, John Duresh. You've been very helpful to me tonight.
All right, well, appreciate it.
I'll let somebody else go.
Yeah, nobody else will do at the moment, but we'll see what happens. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. That was a good conversation.
Yeah, it was. Got a lot of
all
good
right.
Help. All right.
Right. Anybody, talk to you later.
Thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. If anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, or half a browser should be a button. Anyway, I'll take a few minutes to talk about a few other things. We were talking about a couple of things. Talking about an eighth grade level back going up into a college level. You can find the eighth grade test of 1895. You'll find that under Starter Committee of Safety. Come down to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools. Okay. And what you'll come down to COS Organizing Instructional PDF Documents. And we threw in here a couple of things, the eighth grade test of 1895. And people might want to read through this, okay? And this was a test in order to get through the eighth grade. And you'll find that this is pretty much college-level stuff. And they did it in eighth grade. Just imagine the education. If we had a proper education, if we taught our teachers how to really teach and instruct, and give them the proper books and instructional books for teaching on that level. You know, teachers get the teacher's book. They're supposed to follow through that process, which guides them through the teaching level. Some are better than others, of course, but at least they all are, should have the same structure. Unfortunately, the structure they have is destructive, because it's not about building anything good, you know, and morals. It's about destroying, ultimately, the United States of America. But I know we homeschooled our children, and when you get the books, you used to get for history, geography, I'm trying to think what they called them books, but in any event, you get the books on the different subjects, and but then you get the instructional books for the teacher. Okay, so we can teach our teachers how to properly teach and lay it out what it is that they should be teaching. You can imagine what kind of a education our children would have if we literally taught them the real things that they need to learn in life, you know. So anyway, you can look at these tests, this test here on that page. There's another thing I just want to quickly look at here, and again, nobody in the queue, so I'll continue to talk for a while, I guess. We have a paper in here. Let's see, where is it at? Here it is. 3/4 of a penny's worth, okay? And this is the ratio value of a dollar, okay, to gold, the silver dollar to gold. Let me make this a little bigger for people to see. Okay, for instance, in 1913, the dollar worth 100 cents cost $19.96, so let's call it $20 in silver to make that meeting of 100 cents, $1. So with the value to gold would be 20 of them, so it'd be $20 to make an ounce of gold. Okay, that's the ratio it starts off with. But right now, the ratio at this point in 2024, I updated it just this year. I had updated a couple of years ago, Matter of fact, I think it was 20, when I originally wrote this, it might have been 2017, but in 2023 I updated it, and I updated it, which was a little over a penny. But now, with 2024, which was last year, I had updated it, and it were, the dollar was valued at 0.25 cents. That's the value of a dollar, you know. So if you went into a store today, let's call it a penny so it's easy to think about it. So if you go into the store and you pay $3 for a candy bar, that candy bar would have been 3 cents if we had real money back. So the value of that money really was it was very strong because there was no inflation, okay? And here's a, for instance, a loaf of bread in 1913 was 6 cents, okay? A gallon of gas was 12 cents. A gallon of milk was 35 cents. A dozen of eggs was 37 cents. Let's see, a sirloin steak was 24 cents a pound, okay? 5 pounds of potatoes was 2 cents. A new house would cost, $3,395. So $3,400, $3,400 for a house, to buy a house. I remember in the 70s, you could buy a house and have it built, goodness, for like 20 grand, okay? You can build a house. Today, forget about it. Yeah. A choice apartment on 125th Street, 125th East 93rd Street, that's between Park and Lexington Avenue. It's kind of a ritzy area. Okay, $125 for a three-bedroom apartment. In the same building for $165 a month, I think it's a, let me see. Okay, a choice apartment was $125. A three-bedroom apartment was $165. Okay, a good dinner at a nice restaurant would cost a dollar. It cost 3 cents to mail a first-class letter. For a nickel, you could buy a hamburger or a chocolate malted at a Subway stop at Times Square. To go into the movie theaters was 15 cents. I remember when I was a kid, my mom and dad would give me, it was like 75 cents to go to the movies. Spent the whole day there. You know, they had cartoons, and then they had two movies, and buy popcorn and get your soda, and still walk out with some change in your pocket, okay? 75 cents, okay? Spent the whole Saturday in the movie theater. We'd go there at 10 o'clock when they started the matinee, and you'd get out of there at 3, 4 o'clock, you know? But that's what they've done. They destroyed our whole economy. All right, I do see someone in the queue, so we'll take that person. Anonymous, give us your first name and your state.
Hi, John.
Hi. Your first name again and state.
You can't hear it, right? Can you hear the echo?
No, I don't hear the echo, no.
I've started the course, and...
Let me ask you a question. When you hear the echo, are you hearing the echo of your own voice, or are you hearing the echo coming through someone else?
Why can't we say innocent?
Innocent what?
I'm pleading innocent instead of guilty, not guilty. Is that just a formality?
Okay. Well, once you make the plea, you're in their jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
So that's the big problem. And if you don't plea, and the judge says, "Well, I'll put in a plea for you," well, you got to be careful. Because you could ask the question, but I don't know that you really want to do this, especially without knowledge. Could ask the question if they're representing you, because the judge can't put a plea in for you. Okay?
Right.
Remind me of the case again. What kind of case is this?
Oh, it was something that came up when I was listening. Let me just share some. There was a man named Norman Dodd. You probably heard of him.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have his last words with goodness, what's his name, Griffin. Okay, an interview with Griffin. We have that up on our website. We do have it in our civics course. You'll see the Norman Todd.
It was an eye-opener because there was another woman by the name of Isserby, and I just couldn't put it together. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing her name terribly, but she did a lot on the educational system and how it was infiltrated. And he was doing it in a way that was, I mean, he was totally daunted, because
he was the lead investigator in a congressional manner concerning un-American activities within our government. And yeah. And he did a report, trying to think of what the name of the congressman that had initiated it. But he was the lead investigator, and it was one of the persons. He had a woman working with him, which yeah. Was probably may have been a lawyer or at least a paralegal, but working with him. There was two of them working. And as they went through this whole investigation, looking into, for instance, I think it was, goodness, what's the name of that? Rockefeller, okay, looking into the beginnings of Rockefeller, looking into their trust and what was going on and yeah. so on. It's an eye-opening thing. But the end of the day is what they discovered was so frightening that the woman that worked with him literally went mad, and they had to yeah. put her away somewhere because the fear of what was discovered concerning what's behind our government, which the deep state is just the beginning of what's really behind our government. But anyway, yeah, we have that documentary in our civics course.
That's the same interview that I have seen. I have a copy of it. And so, I was looking at because I graduated in 73.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, what happened to me? And I remember when I was in the sixth grade, we had our sixth grade reader, and we'd completed it, and we had 2 months left. And the teacher said, well, we're going to go into the seventh grade reader. And we were so excited, And she goes, now, okay, everybody got their new books. She said, now we're going to try something. We're going to time your reading. And that destroyed my love of reading. Because I'm competitive. I was competitive as a child, and I wanted to do well, and my comprehension just tanked, and I stopped loving reading. So that's one way that it kind of got in. And another way was they did this new math. They called it new math. I was in the fifth grade, and I was in the top class, and all that. And but it was really stupid to me, the way that they made you write out, if you're doing division, you don't just, you have to write it out on the side. I just thought it was really stupid.
They wanted to see how you accomplished your answer. And, I used to be able to do it really short term, I can't really call it shorthand, I guess, but for lack of a word, I'll call it that. Skipping a lot of steps and still coming up with the right answer. And they don't like that.
Yeah, and so I asked to go down I didn't want to be in the top class anymore. I went down to the next level, and I was so happy. It was insane to me. It was stupid. It's like Dick and Jane. I used to think, okay, I've got to learn how to read. This looks really stupid. See Jane run. It was and then later I realized that, I need to learn these words. And even as a little kid, I realized that I needed to know those words, but I just thought the framing of it was very uninteresting. And
phonics. So that phonics was the biggest mistake they ever taken that out of the schools, and they called it reading with some stupidity like that. I don't know. But go ahead.
Yeah. But anyway, it's like, why mess with it? But we know that there's a bigger picture here. It's a war between God and Satan, and they're trying to cause us to stumble. And I spent the day going through the first couple of I listened to the first one several times, and then I realized that I have to make a decision to do this. It's not like a joiner thing. And I kept seeing things about I surrender, and it's like, I need a conversion experience. And I'm going to have to just keep ahead, and because my reading, and it's in my face, because my whole life I was a photographer and a video journalist and all this, a sound engineer, stuff I didn't have to read. You know, I could understand things in other ways. And it's not like I have a reading deficit, but I threw out all the books I didn't want to read, and I do want to learn this, and it's been, there's just a lot to digest, and so I have to be patient and instead of rush through things, but
let me give you something that I learned unfortunately not early in life but later in life, because I had problems with reading and comprehension and so on. But what I learned was that as long as you understand something, forget about trying to remember anything. I don't try to remember anything. I just make sure I understand every word, every phrase, every sentence, every paragraph. And if I don't understand what I'm reading in that paragraph, you know, I get out my dictionary, start looking up words, and then you got to come to an understanding before you move on, because learning is building blocks. The difficult things, complex things, is just a whole collection of a lot of simple things. Okay, that's all it is. And so if you understand, that's all you really need. Now, as far as being able to articulate, you know, once you get those things and you understand it, it's in your head, it's there, and you can make good reasoning on whatever the subject matter is that you've been looking at, and when other people talk, you can know when people are right or wrong to some degree, but you may not be able to articulate very well. But articulation comes with really, you know, repetitiveness, to come through something over and over and over again. You know, I'm a student of the Bible, and when you study the Bible, you're constantly going back to certain verses to build something up here, an understanding there. And then when you go over to this here to learn something there, sometimes you cross-reference the same verses that you might have looked or a certain verse. In other words, it becomes repetitive. Okay, you hear things. And as a writer, you know, I've written a lot of books, so as a writer and doing research and writing and putting it together and making it work together, logically speaking, and all that stuff, you know, all that work, that puts it into the brain, and therefore you're able to articulate these things. It kind of just falls out, you know. And anybody who's really got a good education that is has really, you know, become excellent in a particular subject matter understands and what I'm talking about, because I got to believe they understand the same thing, unless you have a photographic memory. You know, some people have photographic memories. So,
right. But, yeah, I hear you. I just know that it's just something that's been coming to me today, and because I was kind of tired, it was like I was wiped out, you know, but it was okay, because that I've got to get my muscles going here, and it's to save my life. I mean, I'm okay. God's with me. And you know, years ago I picked up a Bible that was sitting on a table in my living room, and I tried to read it. You know, I opened the book of Job, and now I know Job was not anything like what I thought it was, but I closed it, and I said, God, you know, if you want me to read this, I need a teacher. I need somebody to help me understand what it's really saying and not interpret. And I'm tired of pretending like I know what it's saying. Mm-hmm. And like, so then like within 3 months, because that's usually how it works, I ask for it and I wait and let it come to me. And now I, you know, I use Strong's Concordance, exhaustive one. And I mean, we have to be careful with these books, because, you know, the sticky fingers get into all these precious books and change things. And, you know, so, and then I have some other, you know, books that I use for reference, but I really want to know what I'm reading. And so that's a good thing. And well, I'm comforted by what I'm seeing. Uh-huh.
When it comes to the Bible, you have to really be careful, because you want to look, the Bible is its own interpreter. And the Bible is its own dictionary. And you don't want to go out to books of men to try to understand a book that God gave us. So line upon line, precept upon precept is the key that God gives us. And God even said what you're saying. You know, this is a case, for instance, I think it was Philip and the eunuch in a chariot that he had met along the road, and he was reading, I forget where, someplace in Isaiah he was reading, and I think it was Philip. Philip said to him, do you understand what you're reading? And he says, how can I unless I have a teacher? I don't know these things.
Yeah.
And so he founded upon him that particular verses, I think it was in Isaiah, which led them to Christ, of course, and baptism. And then he said to them, what prevents me from becoming baptized? And then, of course, Philip baptized him, and the Spirit just took him, and he disappeared, and he went back on wherever he was going. But in any event, that was a miraculous thing. But the point is, when it comes to the Bible, a teacher is required at least to get going. But the teacher, if you got a good teacher, that teacher really should be teaching you how to teach yourself, how to look at the Bible.
And by the way, that's what I have. Yeah.
We have Bible studies every Wednesday in this room at 7:30 Eastern. It's a 1-hour Bible study. We're in the Gospel of John right now. So anybody interested, and we've recorded all those. We did the book of Revelation. We did the book of Matthew. We're doing John right now. Plus, I have so many studies that I've been doing over many years. It's all recorded and up there on our website. But you can come, if you want, to our Bible studies on Wednesday night, 7:30 Eastern time, right here in this room.
Okay, thank you. And you know, I was thinking, I was seeing that, the common law, It really needs the Holy Spirit. And like, the Counter-Reformation people have really done a great job of confusing everybody about all that, And I was thinking about how, jurisdiction is actually a spiritual thing, because it sets a veil over the whole courtroom. If it's a jurisdiction or not, you're not in the right jurisdiction. When the truth is really what the jurisdiction, there's no other jurisdiction but the truth. And I'm just in the beginning and getting my chops, and I'm not taking a lot of notes like you suggested. And it's really great because I can relax and just listen and read.
And you can go back to it. And also, the forms we refer to, you can always go back to them. I mean, yeah, your first time through the course, you have to forget about taking notes. Don't even bother. You want to just understand everything. And you could stop the recording and rewind if you think you missed something, because you're not understanding something.
Right.
And that's the best way to learn. Now, once you do all that, you have all this information. By the way, I just put up here a Pocket Bible study app, which is probably one of the best Bible studies up there. You can get the original Greek and Hebrew and the Strong's. I use the Young's Literal and Analytical Concordance along with this also, but that's paper. It's a book, paper book. But, if you go to the course, for instance, let me just show you real quick.
I'm on a phone, but I can look it up.
And this is recorded. You can go watch the video on YouTube later on. But on here, if you go under Education Starts Here and you come down to Court Access in the Common Law course, once you're in the course, to the right, two things will open up. One is a Court Access recorded video course, which you already know about. And then, of course, the other one is Court Access Table of Contents, which you should know about also. And
if you
look at that, you have all the forms, everything. So once you go through this course, this becomes your reference right here to work through your reference to pull up forms and different things that you need for your case, okay? And again, learning to write is by reading other people's writings. That's the best way to learn.
Okay, yeah. And at the beginning I heard you talking about the case. I can never remember how to pronounce his name, the man that was murdered. Yes. I was thinking, maybe after the devolution, you'll be ready to go.
Well, we have to get our federal courts back, and I think Trump understands that. If he misses that point, we're not going to get our nation back. We'll have it for a while, but our children and our children's children won't have it if the Lord stays, prevents from coming that long. But in any event, you know, we have to, only the people can really, you know, govern themselves through involvement. They have to be involved, they have to be educated.
Right.
That's the unfortunate thing. But these courts right now, we need to make sure Trump understands more than what we do know, what he does know to some degree, but I think there are things that he don't understand. I mean, stop calling us a democracy or a democratic republic. I mean, just stop it already. Okay, correct the people in your cabinet. That's not what we are. We're a republic, and we're a natural law republic, period. And, you know, we have the opportunity to get rid of the two-party system and just have the people represent the people, and that's what they should be representing.
You know? Yeah, I get tired of hearing that, too. I'm just assuming it's because of the devolution. But it's not challenging people to say it, call it a democracy. If they call it a republic, that might cause them to go, wait a minute. You know, I mean, because it's I've learned a lot about that. I didn't know. You know,
well,
I mean,
the Constitution is very clear that we have a republican form of government. That government is the guarantee a republican form of government, not only in the federal level, but on every state level. If a state level loses that republican form of government, the federal government has every right to go in and fix that problem because it owes it to the people.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to champion the Constitution and bring it back on track. And I don't know if Trump understands that part yet, because that's something that may need to be done. There may be a way not only to take the federal court, but also to take the state courts back from the federal level. There may be a way to do that. I've been trying to think that out to see if I can put something, you know, in
back
writing.
From the federal level? See, I don't understand that, but yeah, okay. I mean, I think it's real important that we, like, I'm in Arizona, and we don't have a government here. We don't have a government here, you know, and so it's like I would no more go ask for help than I would, you know, I mean, I put myself in a bad place there. So so I at least I could go above that if I had to, I suppose. You know, I mean, I was listening to that woman talking. I forgot her name. But, you know, if there is no existence of a court, can't she go straight to the federal level? I mean, you know.
Only in the constitutional, denial, like a denial of due process. He takes it to the federal court. You can champion, win the case. And the winning of the case and your wherefore clause should be a couple of things. Number one, the payment of the penalty, whatever you're suing them for in the federal court, which is a denial of due process, which you can get a lot of money for. And then also that an order to the lower court to open up a court of record with free and independent juries to be able to hear the case. Okay, so listen, we're over our time, so I'll give
Are
you
we? Okay. Nice talking with you, sir. And thank you for all your good work. It's really helping me.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll see you next week. And
next week.
Yeah, and
take
again,
care.
Wants to come to our Bible studies Wednesday night, 7:30, right here in this room. All right. Lord willing, we'll see you next week also. Good night, everybody.
Good night.